This video presentation reviews the major historical events of the life of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and gives a preview of the complicated, political and unfortunate series of events that led to his martyrdom. Imam Hussein alayhi salam was born on the 3rd of Sha'ban in the 4th year of Hijri in Medina. He was the second child of Imam Ali and Lady Fatima alayhi salam after Imam Hassan alayhi salam, and the second grandchild of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The age difference between Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein was less than 11 months. After his birth, Angel Gabriel came to the Prophet and said, "O Prophet, Ali is to you like Harun was to Musa, so name this child the name of Harun's younger son Shubayr, which in Arabic is Hussein." After the Holy Prophet whispered the Adhan in the baby's ears, he had tears in his eyes. He said, "This child will be killed by a group of rebellious and cruel men to whom God has forbidden my intercession, Shifa'at." The Prophet also carried out some traditions for the newborn, similar to what he did for Imam Hassan, such as sacrificing two animals, shaving the baby's head, and paying silver equivalent to the weight of the baby's hair to charity. The Holy Prophet had a special place in his heart for both of his grandsons, Imam Hassan and Hussein, who are a part of his household and are purified according to the verse of Tathir. The Prophet encouraged all the believers to love and respect his household, as the verse from the Holy Quran states, "I do not ask you for any reward except love for my kin." The Prophet had said that Imam Hassan and Hussein are the leaders of the youth of paradise and are imams whether they are sitting or standing, implying whether they are at peace or at war with injustice. The Prophet had also said, "Hussein is from me and I am from Hussein." There are a few incidents where the Prophet treated Imam Hassan and Hussein as adults, honoring them with a special social status despite their young age, such as when the Prophet accepted them as witnesses for the treaty with the tribe of Saqif, and also accepted their allegiance in the allegiance of Rizwan. This was a privilege that no child had ever shared in the history of the Prophet.
تقديراتنا يا سيد أيهم. محمد لم يأتي مع جنده. انظر.
The Christians of Najran refused to accept Islam after discussing Christianity with the Holy Prophet, but were willing to do mubahila, or the cursing of the untruthful. To the surprise of the Christians, the Holy Prophet did not bring an army or his companions. Instead, he brought his family, Imam Ali, Lady Fatima, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein. After seeing the Prophet's family, the Christians got discouraged from doing the mubahila. It was then when the verse of mubahila was revealed, calling Imam Hassan and Hussein as the sons of the Holy Prophet. Imam Hussein was 6 years old at the Prophet's demise and was present at his bedside. During his last moments, the Prophet hugged his grandsons Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein and said that they both would be oppressed after him and would be killed cruelly. The Prophet then cursed anyone who would oppress them 3 times. Lady Fatima, the only daughter of the Holy Prophet, was martyred within a few months after the demise of the Holy Prophet. The attack on her house, in an attempt to forcefully gain allegiance from Imam Ali for the first caliph, left Lady Fatima severely injured and even caused the miscarriage of her baby. Eventually, she passed away. Imam Hassan and Hussein witnessed this injustice and were present in the secretive nightly burial of their mother. Abu Dharr, a companion of the Prophet, objected to the luxurious overspending of the government of the third caliph. The caliph then exiled him and ordered no one to accompany him. However, Imam Ali, his brother Aqil, Imam Hassan and Hussein and Ammar went to bid farewell to Abu Dharr. Imam Hussein expressed his sympathy and provided him with comforting words. When the caliph's house was surrounded by people objecting to his unjust government, Imam Ali sent a group of Banu Hashim, including his sons, Imam Hassan and Hussein, to protect the caliph. Imam Hussein always accompanied his father during his caliphate and supported him in all circumstances. Imam Hussein was a brave and courageous warrior in the battles of Jamal, Siffin, and Nahrawan. He also advised and delivered wise speeches on many occasions and encouraged people to come to war and support his father. During the Battle of Jamal, Imam Ali appointed Imam Hassan and Hussein as the leaders of the right and left sections of the army, respectively. Imam Hassan and Hussein had a key role in the preparation and recruitment of the army for the war against Muawiyah. They delivered roaring speeches to encourage participation in the war and also contributed in organizing and training the army. When Imam Ali left Kufa with his troops for the Battle of Siffin, he stopped at the land of Karbala. Imam was deeply sorrowed and he cried. He informed Imam Hussein about his martyrdom in this land. Before the Battle of Siffin, when Muawiyah's troops blocked access to water from Imam Ali's troops, Imam Ali sent Imam Hussein with his troops where they successfully opened the water access. Imam Ali said that this first victory was due to the blessings of the presence of Imam Hussein. During the battle, Imam Ali appointed Imam Hassan and Hussein as the leaders of the right side of his army, and they fought courageously. Imam Hussein was also appointed as one of his father's witnesses during the negotiation after the battle. Towards the end of Imam Ali's life, he was preparing an army to go against Muawiyah. He appointed Imam Hussein as the leader for 10,000 soldiers. However, with Imam Ali's martyrdom, the army lost its unity. After Imam Ali was struck, he appointed Imam Hassan to take care of his personal affairs and introduced him as the next Imam to his followers, known as the Shias. He also appointed Imam Hussein as the next Imam after Imam Hassan. Imam Hassan and Hussein and a few others buried Imam Ali secretly at night from the fear of revenge and insult from his enemies. The progeny of the Prophet had to face such atrocities where Imam Hussein witnessed both his mother and father being buried at night. When Imam Hassan became the caliph, Imam Hussein gave allegiance to his brother and was his right hand. It was a short caliphate that lasted less than 7 months. Imam Hussein had a key role in the preparation of the army and was with his brother when they moved to Madain for the war against Muawiyah. When Imam Hassan had to accept a peace treaty with Muawiyah, due to lack of support from his army, Imam Hussein obeyed his brother's decision and accepted the peace treaty. Imam Hussein refused a group of Shia followers who were asking him to wage war against Muawiyah and notified them of his obedience to his brother's decision. After the peace treaty with Muawiyah, Imam Hassan and Hussein returned to Medina. When Imam Hassan was poisoned, in his will to Imam Hussein, he requested to be buried near his grandfather, the Prophet. Imam Hassan did not want any bloodshed on his burial, and in case of any opposition, he requested to be buried near his grandmother, Fatima bint Asad, in the Baqi cemetery. Imam Hussein, on the first day as Imam, faced a challenge in the burial of his brother. Marwan Hakam and his troops, with the support of Aisha, the Prophet's wife, didn't allow Imam Hassan's body to get close to the Prophet's tomb. In the conflict between the people and the troops, many arrows were fired towards Imam Hassan's body. Imam Hussein controlled the situation and directed the crowd towards the Baqi cemetery by reminding them of Imam Hassan's will. The conflict during Imam Hassan's burial was a strong message to Imam Hussein from the Umayyads that in case of any opposition, he would be faced with their swords. During Muawiyah's time, Imam Hussein's life and activities were under pressure and intense surveillance by the government, so much so that even his supporters were prevented from meeting with him freely at times. As a result, the number of narrations quoted from Imam Hassan and Hussein during Muawiyah's time is low when compared with the other holy imams. Imam Hussein continued his brother's policy regarding Muawiyah for around 10 years until Muawiyah's death. When the Imam's Shia followers from Kufa contacted him shortly after Imam Hassan's martyrdom, asking for an uprising against the injustices of Muawiyah, the Imam reminded them about his commitment to the peace treaty and asked them to wait until Muawiyah's death. If the Imam were to rise in Muawiyah's time, Muawiyah would kill him and blame him as a traitor to the peace treaty. Therefore, the Imam's death would be misinterpreted by the Muslim community. The Imam's commitment to the peace treaty didn't stop him from objecting to Muawiyah's crimes and violations of the peace treaty conditions. In many situations, the Imam contacted Muawiyah and condemned his actions, such as for the killings of the Shia leaders and Prophet's companions, Hujr ibn Adi and Amr ibn Hamiq. Imam Hussein was very respected, being the closest living blood relative to the Prophet, and he was a symbol of piety in the society. The Imam used all opportunities to guide the Muslims to the true Islamic teachings. He performed Hajj 25 times on foot during his lifetime. His famous supplication of Arafat is narrated during this time. After years of being in power, Muawiyah decided to keep the government in the Umayyads by passing it on to his only son Yazid. For the first time since the Prophet's demise, Muawiyah intended to change the system of government from a caliphate to a monarchy. Muawiyah himself knew that Yazid lacked public popularity, as he did not even keep the Islamic outlook in life like himself. He publicly drank alcohol, womanized, and indulged in sinful behavior. In order to get allegiance for Yazid, Muawiyah poisoned and bribed Yazid's main rivals for caliphate. Muawiyah martyred Imam Hassan as he knew that appointing a successor was explicitly against their peace treaty. Muawiyah tried bribing some of the political leaders, commanded some to propagate Yazid as a good leader, and removed those governors who failed to implement this mission. After years of planning, he finally succeeded in getting allegiance from the people all around the Islamic territory. However, Imam Hussein refused to pledge allegiance. Muawiyah sent a letter to Imam Hussein, to which the Imam responded by condemning his actions to get allegiance for a successor, especially for someone like Yazid. Muawiyah then decided to personally visit Medina and made a public speech where he spoke highly of Yazid to encourage the people to pay allegiance to him. Imam Hussein interrupted the speech and disqualified Yazid, rejecting allegiance to someone like him. Thus, Imam Hussein remained the main opponent of Yazid for allegiance. Muawiyah died after being in power for nearly 42 years. He was initially appointed by the second caliph as the governor of Syria and was in control of the entire Islamic territory for around 20 years after the peace treaty was established with Imam Hassan. After Muawiyah's death, his son Yazid came into power. He sent letters to his governors and asked them to announce Muawiyah's death and get allegiance from the people on his behalf. Yazid sent an additional letter to Medina that ordered his governor Walid to take immediate allegiance for him from Imam Hussein before the news of Muawiyah's death spread in the city. Yazid clearly told Walid to either get Imam's allegiance or to send his slaughtered head back. In his efforts to get the Imam's allegiance, Walid called the Imam to his palace. The Imam was suspicious of this meeting and went with about 30 men from his family and supporters for protection. He told them to hide their swords and stay behind the door and intervene only when he called. Inside, Walid told the Imam about the death of Muawiyah and asked for the Imam's allegiance to Yazid. The Imam replied by saying that someone like himself should not pay allegiance in private but rather in public. Walid accepted this and let the Imam go, as he did not want to bear the responsibility of killing the Imam. On the following day, the Imam notified Walid that he refuses to pay allegiance to Yazid. Walid reported back to Yazid, who threatened him and ordered him to get a forceful allegiance from the Imam. The Imam knew that Medina was no longer safe for him, as Yazid would take any measures to eliminate him. He didn't want his death to be forgotten silently, similar to the injustice that happened to Imam Hassan. Thus, the Imam decided to leave Medina and migrated to Mecca in less than 3 days after his meeting with Walid. He decided to migrate with his family, as it was very much possible that the government would imprison them as hostages to pressurize the Imam for allegiance. Prior to migrating, the Imam bid farewell to his relatives and visited the tombs of his grandfather the Prophet, as well as of his mother Lady Fatima and his brother Imam Hassan. He wrote a will and gave it to his brother Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah. In his will, the Imam clearly explained the purpose of his uprising. The Imam said, "My intention for this uprising is to guide the nation of my grandfather and enjoin the good and forbid the wrong." The Imam left Medina at night and recited the verse of the Quran in which Prophet Moses spoke when he was escaping alone from Egypt to Madian, which was,
فَخَرَجَ مِنْهَا خَائِفًا يَتَرَقَّبْ قَالَ رَبِّ نَجِّنِي مِنَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ.
Therefore, he got away from there while in fear. He, Moses, said, "O my Lord, save me from the wrongdoing people." On his way to Mecca, the Imam met some travelers and informed them of his intention to refuse allegiance to Yazid. A few of these travelers joined the Imam. When the Imam saw Mecca from afar, he recited the verse of the Quran in which Prophet Moses spoke when he was moving towards Madian, which was,
ولما توجه تلقاء مدين قال عسى ربي أن يهديني سواء السبيل.
And when he directed himself towards Madian, he said, "Perhaps my Lord will guide me to the sound way." Later, when Yazid was informed about the Imam's migration to Mecca, he revoked the governor of Medina in anger and assigned it to the governor of Mecca. While in Mecca, the Imam was visited day and night by many pilgrims who had come to Mecca for Umrah and Hajj. The Imam spoke to them about his intentions for the uprisal against Yazid, but he had limited support from the Meccans. Mecca was dominated by the Quraysh tribe, who had opposed the Prophet ever since he began his mission, and the majority of them did not convert to Islam until after the conquest of Mecca by the Prophet. Furthermore, they had hatred towards Imam Ali, as he had killed their relatives during their wars against the Prophet. When the people of Kufa found out that the Imam had not paid allegiance to Yazid and had migrated to Mecca, they decided to invite the Imam to Kufa and pledge their support for his uprising against Yazid. There was a flood of letters that were sent to the Imam from Kufa. In just one day, the Imam received around 600 letters from Kufa, and they totaled to about 12,000 letters. The Imam had many Shia followers in Kufa, and they had more political freedom. Kufa was also a bigger city than Mecca and Medina, with more population and potential for troops, as it was the main center of opposition to Umayyads since the caliphate of Imam Ali. Thus, the Imam sent his cousin Muslim ibn Aqil to investigate if the Kufians were sincere in their intention. To fulfill his responsibilities, the Imam also sent letters to the tribal leaders of Basra and asked for their support. Unlike the Kufians, the people from Basra had not contacted the Imam prior to this. Only a small group of people from Basra joined the Imam. One of the Imam's recipients took the Imam's letter to Ibn Ziyad, the governor of Basra. In response, the governor ordered to kill the Imam's messenger, Suleiman ibn Razin, who became the first martyr of the Imam's uprising. When Muslim ibn Aqil arrived at Kufa, 18,000 people paid allegiance to him on behalf of the Imam. He informed the Imam of this and asked him to come towards Kufa immediately. People were continuously coming to Muslim for allegiance, and in total, up to 40,000 people paid allegiance. However, Yazid supporters were continuously reporting the political status of Kufa to Yazid and wanted him to replace the current governor of Kufa with a hostile one. Yazid thus gave the governorship of Kufa to Ibn Ziyad, the governor of Basra, and ordered him to suppress the uprising of the Kufians. Ibn Ziyad immediately departed towards Kufa, and upon arrival, he delivered a speech in the mosque in which he introduced himself as the new governor of Kufa. He promised kindness to the obedient citizens while threatening the supporters of Muslims. Ibn Ziyad also asked the city's record keepers to provide him with a list of all the politically active residents that were in support of Muslims' uprising. He also spread rumors in the city that Yazid's army was on their way to suppress them. Ideally, Muslim wanted the Imam to arrive before initiating the uprising. Therefore, he secretly relocated to Hani ibn Urwa's house, who was an influential Shia leader. However, Ibn Ziyad's spies found Muslim's location and arrested Hani. Hani's tribe came in large numbers to Ibn Ziyad's palace to free him. The city's judge, whom the people trusted, lied to them that Hani is safe and that he would be released soon, so his supporters dispersed. Muslim noticed his supporters dividing and scattering, and that with a governor like Ibn Ziyad, no one including himself would be safe in Kufa. Thus, he started an uprising to release Hani by calling his supporters. As a result, nearly 4,000 people surrounded Ibn Ziyad's palace. Ibn Ziyad ordered the elderly and influential individuals of Kufa to provide promises to the people in obedience to the government and to create fear in the hearts of the protesters by threatening them with a war against the army of Yazid. This fear caused families to separate their relatives from Muslim's army. Muslim supporters decreased in number drastically by the night, to the point where Muslim was left all alone. Eventually, Muslim was caught by Ibn Ziyad and was martyred. Ibn Ziyad then ordered Hani to be killed and sent Hani and Muslim's heads to Yazid. After Ibn Ziyad gained full control of Kufa, he imprisoned many Shia followers and leaders, and threatened thousands of the Kufans to join his army. Ibn Ziyad also blocked all access to the roads from Kufa to the Imam, so that no one from Kufa could go join the Imam. After receiving the letter from Muslim, the Imam left Mecca in the darkness of the dawn on the 8th of the month of Zilhajj, one day before the Hajj pilgrimage started. This day coincided with the day of Muslim's uprising and his defeat in Kufa. The Imam left Mecca as he had authenticated news that Yazid was planning on his assassination while the pilgrims were performing Hajj, as they did not carry any weapons. The Imam did not want his blood to be shed in the vicinity of the Holy Kaaba due to the honor of the holy site. The Imam told some that he preferred his blood to be shed outside as opposed to inside the vicinity of the holy site. Thus, the Imam left Mecca with a caravan of about 130 people after staying there for 4 months and 5 days. When the Imam was exiting Mecca, the Meccan army stopped the Imam. There was a physical tension between the two sides, and the Meccan governor finally withdrew in fear of turmoil among the Hajj pilgrims. When the Imam left Mecca, the governor of Mecca sent a letter to the Imam and asked him to return to Mecca, which was refused by the Imam. Shortly after leaving Mecca, the Imam sent a messenger to Muslim to inform him of his departure towards Kufa. The Imam's messenger, Abdullah ibn Yaqtur, was arrested. Ibn Ziyad ordered that he be thrown off the roof of the palace and murdered him. Halfway through his journey, the Imam sent another messenger, Qais ibn Mushir, towards Muslim, but he too was arrested. Ibn Ziyad asked him to go to the pulpit and curse the Imam. Qais went to the pulpit and told the people that the Imam is underway and cursed Ibn Ziyad. He was then martyred similar to Abdullah ibn Yaqtur and became the third martyred messenger of the Imam. The Imam was moving at a very fast pace in the desert towards Kufa. This distance would normally take around 1 month for travelers. Along the way, he informed other travelers about his intention of the uprising against Yazid. Some people, such as Zuhayr ibn Qayn, a famous warrior, as well as a Christian, Wahib, who later converted to Islam, joined the Imam on his way. The Imam had traveled most of the way towards Kufa for about 15 days. At the place known as Zubala, which is in the current day border between Saudi Arabia and Iraq, the Imam received verified news of the martyrdom of Muslim, Hani and Abdullah ibn Yaqtur. The Imam spoke to his supporters about the crisis in Kufa and allowed them to leave him. Many who had joined the Imam for power or political convenience separated from the Imam at this location. There was no place for Imam Hussein, the dear grandson of the Prophet, to go. It was as if the earth had shrunken for him. He had initially left Medina towards Mecca because Yazid had ordered his governor in Medina to get the Imam's allegiance or kill him. The Imam had then left Mecca towards Kufa, as Yazid had sent his agents to assassinate him during the Hajj pilgrimage. And now, in the middle of the vast desert between Hijaz and Iraq, the Imam had received disappointing news from Kufa. The Imam continued his way to Kufa, as he knew that his presence in Kufa would be much more effective than Muslims, and that he might still have an opportunity to unify his Shia followers, who were divided for a long time by Muawiyah's politics. Also, there was a possibility that many other non-Shias who had invited the Imam to Kufa would change sides. After a few days, the Imam was confronted by an army of about 1,000 horse riders who were under the leadership of Hur and had the orders to arrest the Imam. The Imam resisted and decided to go back to Medina. Hur opposed and stated his orders not to leave the Imam alone under any circumstances. He said to the Imam that he doesn't have an order for war and gave the Imam two choices, either to surrender and come to Kufa with him or go somewhere else other than Kufa or Medina. Thus, the Imam had to redirect his way from Kufa. In the following days, Hur received a letter from Ibn Ziyad that ordered him to stop the Imam in the desert away from any residential area. Therefore, on the second day of Muharram, the Imam entered the land of Karbala. Some of the Imam's companions suggested to start a war with the army of Hur before any additional help joined Hur's army. However, the Imam declined as he did not want to initiate the war. On the third day of Muharram, Umar ibn Sa'd arrived at Karbala with 4,000 troops and took the leadership of the Kufan army from Hur. Umar ibn Sa'd was hesitant to come to Karbala, but Ibn Ziyad threatened him that he would lose his candidacy for the governorship of Ray, and thus he accepted. The Kufan army was arriving in thousands day after day. By the 6th of Muharram, the Kufan army was complete, at around 22,000 to 35,000 soldiers. During this time, the Shia followers in Kufa were no longer united and had lost the power of unity. The majority of them were either in prison or hiding to save their lives and to avoid joining the Kufan army. If they were forcefully recruited, they would escape before arriving at Karbala. According to some narrations, up to 32 soldiers from the Kufan army had joined the Imam in Karbala. Through the course of several days, the Imam had a few meetings with Umar ibn Sa'd, where he tried to warn him to avoid bloodshed and to allow the Imam to return. Umar ibn Sa'd wrote a letter to Ibn Ziyad and encouraged him to accept the Imam's offer. Ibn Ziyad ordered Umar ibn Sa'd to block the access of water from the Euphrates River to put more pressure on the Imam to pay allegiance. Thus, by the beginning of the seventh day of Muharram, the Imam did not have access to water. On the ninth day of Muharram, Umar ibn Sa'd received a letter from Ibn Ziyad denying his proposal to avoid a war and threatened to replace him with Shimr if he failed to finish the Imam. Ibn Ziyad also told Umar ibn Sa'd explicitly to trample the Imam's body after his victory. Thus, after the afternoon prayers, Umar ibn Sa'd prepared his army for the war, where the Imam sent his brother Abbas to postpone the war until the next day's morning. Umar ibn Sa'd accepted, with hopes that the Imam would surrender. At nightfall, the Imam delivered a speech for his companions and informed them that everyone who stays with him would certainly be killed tomorrow in the war. The Imam appreciated them for being loyal to him and informed them that their presence would not prevent his death. He urged them to use the darkness of the night to leave from his side and asked each one of them to take the hand of one of his male family members. The Imam's companions expressed their loyalties and no one left the Imam. و همینطور هزار بار بمیرم و زنده شدم ترکتان نخواهم کرد. That night, the Imam asked his companions to rearrange the tents and to dig a trench behind the tents. He asked them to fill the trench with wood and leaves. The Imam and his companions spent that night in prayer and prepared for the war. In the morning of Ashura, the 10th of Muharram in the year 61 Hijri, after the morning prayers, the Imam prepared his thirsty army of 72 companions that consisted of 40 soldiers on foot and 32 on horses. The Imam then ordered the trenches behind the tents to be put on fire so that the enemy could not attack from behind. The Imam spoke to the Kufan army and reminded them that he was the grandson of the Prophet and was very dear to him. He told them that he had arrived because of their invitations. He told them that if they didn't want him in Kufa, he would go back to somewhere safe. The Imam also asked them if anyone wanted to join him. Hur was among the very few people that was touched by the Imam's words and decided to switch sides and join the Imam. Hur repented and requested to be sent to the battlefield immediately. The Imam accepted his repentance and allowed him to go to the battlefield.
Oh,
Umar ibn Sa'd was the first person to start the battle by firing an arrow. He asked his army to be his witness for Ibn Ziyad that he had initiated the war. His troops followed by firing thousands of arrows and then invaded the Imam's army. By this time, around 50 of the Imam's companions, which were a large fraction of his army, were martyred, and no one from the Imam's companions was left without an arrow injury. Only a small group of the Imam's companions were left, compared to the thousands of the enemy soldiers. The Imam's companions proceeded to the battlefield one by one, and fought with great courage and honor. They were completely surrounded, but they did not surrender until they were martyred, one after the other. The battle continued into noon. The Imam called his companions for prayer and shortened it to the prayer of fear. The companions who were protecting the Imam switched amongst each other, where a set of them prayed while the others protected them. During the Imam's prayer, many arrows were shot to stop the Imam, as Umar ibn Sa'd did not want his army to know that the Imam was a practicing and dedicated Muslim, since according to their propaganda, any action against the Caliph violates the religion. The Imam's companions did not allow the Imam's family to go to the battlefield while they were still alive. But after all of them were martyred, a total of 17 members from the family of the Imam went to the battlefield one after another. Among them were his son Ali al-Akbar, 7 of his brothers, such as Abbas, his nephews, such as Aun, Muhammad, and Qasim, and his cousins. Towards the end of the battle, the Imam came to the tents to bid farewell to his family. He saw his 6-month-old son Ali al-Asghar, who was suffering from unbearable thirst. The Imam took Ali al-Asghar to the Kufan army and requested them to take the baby and give him some water. At that time, an arrow shot by Harmala pierced the neck of the baby while he was in the Imam's hands. Thank you. The Imam went to the battlefield and spoke to the army one last time to convey his message, but their hearts could not be guided. Then, the Imam went to the battlefield alone, and after a brave combat, he fell down with wounds from hundreds of swords, spears, stones, and arrows on his body. No one dared to go and kill the Imam, as no one wanted to bear the shame and responsibility of killing the Imam. Finally, Sinan ibn Anas approached the Imam and beheaded him from the back of the Imam's neck while he was still alive. After the Imam was martyred, his sword, shoes, ring, clothes, armor, and all of his belongings were seized. His tents were attacked, looted, and put on fire. To fulfill Ibn Ziyad's order, Umar ibn Sa'd asked for volunteers to trample the headless bodies of the Imam and the other martyrs on the sands of Karbala. The women and children of the Imam were taken as captives to Kufa, to Ibn Ziyad's palace, and then to Damascus, to Yazid's palace. Only 50 years after the demise of the Holy Prophet, the leader of the Muslim nation was a man who did not abide by any of the Islamic commandments and openly indulged in sinful behavior. Yazid's family, the Umayyads, with the leadership of his grandfather Abu Sufyan, were the main enemies of the Holy Prophet and had converted to Islam when Muslims had conquered Mecca, only to save their lives. They were not sincere in their belief in Islam, and were always looking for their power and benefits. They had a chance to come back to power during the second and third caliphs, and they were able to stabilize their power during the long governorship of Muawiyah. The title that Muslims used for the caliph was literally successor of the Prophet, and they also called the caliph the commander of the faithful. Muslims viewed the caliphate as a sacred religious leadership, and believed in political obedience despite the character of the person in power. This belief was to the extent that following the legacy of the previous caliphs was part of their faith and a requirement for the new caliph. At this situation, any action against the caliph was interpreted as a false action against the unity of the Muslims and was condemned by the public. Imam Hussein knew that he had only two choices: either pay allegiance to Yazid, or to be killed. The Imam had said that even if I hide inside a hole, they will finally find me and kill me if I don't pay allegiance. However, the Imam knew that his allegiance would legitimize Yazid as a leader, and the Islam that was propagated by Muawiyah and the Umayyads. Thus, the Imam decided to pursue the second choice, and sacrificed everything he had for the sake of God, and the awakening of the Prophet's nation. He was martyred in an unprecedented, horrifying brutality, where his family and companions were martyred thirsty, his six-month-old baby slayed, his head slaughtered, his belongings looted, his ring finger cut off, his body trampled, his family imprisoned, all in the holy month of Muharram, when war and shedding of blood was strictly forbidden and haram. Interestingly, the Imam made a series of clever decisions to maximize the effects of his martyrdom. For instance, the Imam's choice to move from Medina to Mecca to inform pilgrims from all over the nation. His choice to accompany his women and children to witness and carry his message. His choice to postpone the battle from the dark night to the daylight of Ashura. And his martyrdom in front of thousands of eyes were all for the reason that his message would not be forgotten or misinterpreted. The Imam's martyrdom not only disqualified Yazid as a righteous caliph, but for the first time since the Prophet's demise, put an end to the so-called sacred caliphate system, and the Islam that was propagated by the caliphs. Shortly after the Imam's martyrdom, a chain of objections against Yazid and the Umayyads were initiated, which included the Harra event in Medina, Ali Zubayr in Mecca, Tawabin in Kufa, Mukhtar in Kufa, who took revenge against the responsible people in the Imam's martyrdom, Zayd in Kufa, and Yahya in Khurasan. Although these uprisals were defeated by the Umayyads, they removed the legitimacy and popularity of the Umayyads as the righteous governors and were a basis for the next uprisal against them until their extinction. The awakened nation of the Prophet realized that the actual Islamic teachings were coming from the family of the Prophet, and so they supported various uprisals against the Umayyads. Imam al-Husayn was called the Sayyid al-Shuhada, or Master of the Martyrs, and became a symbol of justice, free will, and liberty. The message of Imam Husayn was such that even to this day, despite many difficulties and attempts at suppression, millions of people shed tears while grieving him and visit his shrine in Karbala to honor his message. They hope to include themselves as seekers of justice alongside Imam Husayn alayhi salam.